Chapter 13. Lyria. The Roses Game. The first thing I remember from my dream is the crashing of waves. The first thing I feel when I wake is the ache of my wrist. The first thing I see is the chrome orb floating out of the room through a hole in the ceiling. I scramble up, confused. I am naked. Medical patches cover two wounds on my stomach and a deep cut on my right thigh. My hand is back on, like it was never cut off. A pink line encircles my wrist. The room is circular, clean, and rather grand. The walls are warm wood, except for ovals of glass that peer into aqua blue water filled with coral reefs. Around them, and deeper on, strange creatures swim. Two vaguely human shapes with translucent skin peer back at me from behind a mass of green and pink coral. Their dreamy eyes, big as my fists, are lime green. A lonesome song warbles from their wide mouths. Right. The room has no distinguishable door, but clothing has been set out for me. I pull on the black pants, socks, and green sweater. The fabric is softer than Liam's cheek and smells like roses and pine. When I slip on the shoes, a slight hum fills the room and it rotates, showing more of the aquatic world outside the windows. When the rotation stops, one of the windows slides up. A stone path leads down a corridor of evergreen trees. Right. I follow the path. A night sky peeks through the gaps in the trees, stretching in all directions until the path leads me to a small grove of rose trees. In every direction, the stars and the darkness of space. Between the rose trees, a man waits for me at a table set for tea. He turns from watching the stars to grace me with a smile, and it does feel like grace. The man is too symmetrical to be handsome. He is beautiful and fragile, with skin as smooth as the shell of a quail's egg. His eyes are sunset pink, his hair long and white. I recognize him immediately.
You are safe here. Don't be afraid, he says.
I'm not.
Safe or afraid?
Either.
Is Fel dead?
Yes.
I don't approach the table. It worries me how accustomed I am becoming to death.
How did you sleep? He asks.
Badly, but I'm sure you knew that.
I look around the strange room, wondering how many cameras monitor it.
Nightmares can be such beastly refrains, he says.
I grunt.
I had nightmares as a child, and then I woke into one every single day. Such is the life of a pink. I never could tell which I dreaded more, the nightmares or the reality. I suppose it was the waking hours. In the dreams, there's always the hope it'd be a pleasant one. That's why I admire Red so much. They dread dreams more. At least in the waking hours, they can struggle instead of merely suffer.
He gestures to a seat like I'm a long-lost relative come to visit, and he knows the long, bitter road I've travelled to reach his house all too well. The urge to fall into him is nearly overwhelming. I feel seen, but not seen enough to drop my wits. I don't sit.
I ain't been out long. Nails haven't grown much. We ain't been on a journey.
We're in the asteroid, ain't we? His smile warms my heart, but only its walls.
And by the fact that you're not hiding your face, I know I'm already dead.
You know who I am, then.
Doesn't everyone?
You're Mateo's son, so nah, no tea. I know who you're married to.
For a corpse, you're certainly vivacious, he says, amused.
I ain't been in the Corps as of late, but broadcasts make it through the jamming sometimes. Same with the Holonet. So I know there's two things on the minds of every person in the Corps. Is the Reaper dead? And where did that coward Quicksilver sneak off to?
He strokes his chin.
It's strange being synonymous with someone who is not you. But I suppose that is marriage.
writ even larger when you're married to the father of the rising.
Fitchner Barker was the father of the rising,
I say, surprised by my own sharpness. If there's one hero who never lost his shine in the mud of 121, it's Ares. Io too, but she was always the romantic part of the rising. Darrow was its promise, but Ares was always its father.
Ah, yes, but Fitzner would be nothing without Regulus. Surely you know that. Or is it perhaps that you cannot conscience two fathers, Lyria of Lagolos?
I swallow. You know who I am?
I never forget a face, nor a dossier, especially not those of guests in our house. It was a lovely birthday, wasn't it, when you visited our estate as the fox walker of the Telemannus entourage?
He smirks. Lovely until the after party, I suppose.
I wince. That's when Pax was kidnapped.
Oh, no, don't think I think you're to blame.
We're well aware of the freelancer Ephraim T. Horn. Uniquely crafty fellow, at least when he got out of his own way. Performed a few jobs for us, actually. Not that he knew.
He leans back, and he becomes so somber and sincere that the lights in the room seem to dim.
I know what happened in Camp 121, and my heart breaks for it. For your sister, your father, your nieces, and your nephews. I cannot imagine your pain, nor how it must shape how you see the world.
He licks his lips, reflective, showing his own secret pain.
I know a little of suffering. The worlds are very big, the people in them, and the systems. Well, they are very cold and uncaring. I know what it is to be small, to be stepped on. There's dignity in holding up your hands against the boot, but it crushes all the same.
He touches his breast.
On this fragile heart of mine, I promise no harm will come to you here.
I feel love radiating from him and acceptance. I take a deep breath.
The hardest thing about being a pink must be knowing that you can never be trusted. You are made to lie so well that the rest of us can never be sure.
No, he says with conviction. If you think that, then you will wear the chains fashioned by our oppressors. It's easy to break the chains on your wrists, but the ones in here linger.
He taps at his head. Please, sit. Have tea. Trust me or don't, your existence is at my mercy, and I gave you your hand back after those brutes took it.
I sigh, seeing his point, and sip his tea while watching him like a soldier behind a parapet.
If you know who I am, then you know how annoying it is to have Sun Industries tech in my head. Your husband cheated millions of Reds out of their minds.
No, that was actually democracy in action. Each mind got to vote. Is it our fault they chose the immediate payout instead of maintaining their ownership? How can we promise freedom and then be the arbiter of people's choices? That is not freedom. That is social engineering. That is the long road to tyranny.
He pauses and looks around the room with a sigh.
Benevolent or malevolent, still tyranny.
How was your tea?
Warm, I say.
What is this place?
Let us play a game. For every question of yours I answer, you must answer one of mine in return. We must swear to be honest.
He spits in his hand like a red clansman.
I ain't got much to lose. I spit in mine, and we shake. This place is a self-contained ecosystem within an asteroid, a construction on a scale that has not been seen since the terraforming of the spheres. Why did you come here?
I'm a little baffled by his question.
You already know the answer. Play fair, Lyria.
The thing in my head brought me here.
Lyria.
This
thing in my head, it came out of the figment, the freelancer. It came out of her as she died. It crawled in my bloody damn nose, man. Horrifying stuff. Sometimes it talks to me or shows me things, but then it went quiet, except to tell me it needed repairs. So I followed this urge to get it repaired. Happy? That's how you're here. Why are you here? Play fair, Matteo, I mock. Why are you here? He asks, harder. I'm here because I'm sick of being small. This thing in my head, I know it's a weapon. One that makes me stronger. And I got things I need to do. I'm sick of being at the mercy of bastards. My turn, Matteo. What is this thing in my head?
It is called a psyche. It was developed several decades ago by a brilliant but fragile woman named Agala C. Ken. Agala specialized in neurobionics.
The psyche was created to be an AI partner for the brain to enable the user to be a god among machines, for lack of a better expression.
It was to link the nervous system to drones, ships, computers, missiles.
Blues can already do that.
They can sync on a limited scale, but they cannot control their body while in the sync. The psyche was made so that they could do both concurrently. On an unlimited scale. Imagine sitting here, having this conversation, and running a war 100 kilometers away.
Shit, I murmur. He nods.
Before Fitchner came to my husband, he was a very wrathful man, very controlling. He had been much wronged by gold, and he sowed many seeds for his revenge. The Psyche project was a seed that did not come to fruition. Agala could not see what she was making when she was making it, but after it was complete, she realized her folly.
Could you imagine a man who could wield legions of metal slave soldiers?
No waiting for crops of mortal soldiers to grow, be trained, then reaped by the battle's scythe. Instead, you would have legions of asteroid mind automatically assembled metal soldiers, each one a node within the hive mind. He smiles. I love my husband, but even I fear a world where we rely on the benevolence of a person with so much individual power. If I had that power, even I would become a tyrant. How could I not? There is so much evil to make right.
When she saw what she built, Agala wept.
But, unlike Oppenheimer, who opened Pandora's box and unleashed destruction, she opened the box and slammed down the lid as soon as she saw the gods creeping out. Well, she tried to, at least. My husband thought he could make her continue her work under duress. He was wrong. In protest, Agala released 6 of her early prototypes into the world, and then killed herself. I never got the chance to ask her why. I imagine she thought my husband would make his own psyches eventually. So she must have thought, if gods are inevitable, shouldn't god-killers be as well?
My turn. What would you do if we did repair your prototype? He asks. I'd find my friend and I'd rescue her. Then I guess I'd do what I can to help.
The Republic?
My nephew is on Mars, and the Republic is the one defending Mars, so, yeah?
Even after 1-2-1?
He asks, breaking the rules of the game. Still, I find myself nodding. The camps were a right horror, but it was a Telemannus who saved me. A gold saved me from Reds. And I looked in Virginia's eyes. You can't fake caring like that. Or having a brain like that, so it's got to be hard what they're trying. They ain't good. Not all through, but neither am I. And at least they're trying to stop the boot from coming down. I think it's my job too. And yours. That's why Pax sent me on the path to sniff out your husband.
Pax is innately kind.
I'd say he was also trying to help you.
I shrug.
Maybe. Either way, Pax knows where you are now, Our ship had a tracker. He'll know where I disappeared to, and so will his mother.
No, I'm afraid not. We've cloned the tracker signal and sent it on its way. He thinks you're 100,000 kilometers from here, still sniffing about, lost in space.
Whose turn is it?
I don't bring up the message I sent to our drone.
Mine. Would you actually repair the prototype for me?
That depends.
On? What, your husband?
Contrary to popular opinion, I do what I want. I'm the only one that he loves.
He considers.
And that gives me leverage. So my decision depends on what you'd do with the prototype.
I squint and sip my tea, thinking. He's not serious about repairing the prototype, is he? Or is he trying to gauge what sort of person I am?
I told you what I'd do with it, so...
That's the problem. I don't know if you're lying.
Ironic.
But if you weren't lying, then I would say that I might be inclined to help the Republic.
Then why are you sitting here instead of flying home to Mars?
Because this place cannot be risked. Not in the slightest.
But I sent a bit of my own story in you.
We are splinters of the same tree, red and pink.
If I offered to have our facilities here repair the prototype to full functionality and then sent you off with, 10 sentinels, what would you say?
That's a sentinel, I ask of the orb floating above us. He nods.
My fear of the machine evolves into hunger as I think of the power just one sentinel would bring me. I lick my lips, afraid of my own thoughts.
I'd ask, what's your price?
You, I fear.
He winces. Or rather, a part of you. The prototype has degraded from use. Electromagnetic exposure and blunt force trauma. If we repair it, the integration process will affect the hippocampus and neocortex and the amygdala. These are where our explicit memories, events that happen to you, and our semantic memories, general facts and information, are stored. Semantic memories are left unaffected, as are implicit memories, motor skills and such. But the integration's effect on explicit memories can change from minor to total.
You mean I could forget who I am?
Unlikely, but there will be gaps. Your emotional relationship with your memories may change. There will be holes punched through the story of your life, or memories seen in, I don't know how to put it, black and white, felt with a kind of neutral passivity.
So I'd lose the very things that make me who I am, I say.
He nods. It is good that power does not come without sacrifice. That was the problem with the finished psyche that Agala destroyed. There was no sacrifice.
Though I can't say what you would retain of your memories, I can state that if the integration is a success, you will be able to control sentinels, but also your brain's efficiency will be maximized. Your reflexes will be better than a gold's. Well, most golds.
Your aging will slow. You will jump higher and run faster, control your metabolism, dopamine and adrenaline. You'll sleep on command, integrate with computer systems, and access information faster than you can blink. In short, you will achieve near-mortal omniscience. But the psyche will degrade. It is not invulnerable, and so you will not be immortal. You will not be a god, but you will still be a very dangerous person.
But I might not be me, I say.
I know it is a complicated decision.
He touches his breast again.
But I swear to honor your decision. If you want the power to help the Republic, your friend, it is yours.
He stands.
I will give
no deal. He starts in surprise.
No.
I don't need it, I say. I don't want it.
He's flummoxed.
Lyria, You don't have to decide this instant, and the memory loss isn't assured.
I don't need it. I just need you to take it out and let me go. I feel an existential urge to flee, to wash my hands of the parasite. Just get it out of me.
How will you help your friend without it? He asks.
I don't know, but I'd rather die than forget my sister, my pa, my ma, my brothers. They already died once. If I don't remember them, well, it's just that Liam, my nephew, he's a kid. I haven't told him all about our family yet, about his ma. If I don't, no one will. Then they'll all be gone, like they never mattered. But I know that's not true. They mattered. His confusion fades. He looks as if he's about to cry.
That is very beautiful, Lyria.
You are right. They did matter. And to be honest, with no condescension, I very much admire you for your decision. Though he doesn't say it, I know somehow that he has someone whose memory he keeps alive, like a child shielding a candle against the wind.
Very well, Lyria. If you're sure of your decision...
I nod.
Then we can schedule the operation to remove the psyche.
And then you let me go?
Yes. When the time is right and there is no risk to this place, I will let you go and give you all you need to return home to your nephew.
I'm left in my room to my own devices until Matteo comes to fetch me for my surgery. I pace the whole time, watching the carveling swim through the glass, wondering if I've made the right decision. Wondering which decision is braver, but knowing in the end that I meant what I said to Matteo.
As a girl, I dreamed of being big and strong, of being carved like Darrow. But I feel I've only just started becoming me. I'm gaining strength from all the bad that's happened to me. To lose that now seems like a betrayal of what I've gone through so far. Worse, it's a betrayal of everyone who's gone out of their way to help me. I jump when Matteo sets his hand on my shoulder to guide me to the operating table. My white paper shift crinkles as I lay down. The table is warm, though the room is cold and blinding white. I flinch as a chrome orb descends from the ceiling and begins unfolding hidden appendages until it has 8.
I know Charlotte looks like a monster, but she's actually very sweet, Matteo says of the orb.
I named her for a character in one of my favourite books. You are in good hands.
A long appendage with a crimson disc on the end extends toward me.
I smell burning hair and feel a sting on my scalp. The appendage withdraws and I reach up to touch my bald head.
That bitch, I say.
Matteo chuckles.
You'll be out for the procedure, don't worry.
You ever had your skull drilled into? I ask.
Sadly, yes, he replies. Sensing my nervousness, he slides my hand between his and smiles down at me.
His eyes are warm pools of sunset pink, a colour I did not know existed when I lived in the grimness of my mind.
I want to thank you, Lyria.
For what?
He looks down, very sensitive. In life, it is very tempting to forget the past and try to make a perfect future. But the past and the pain we have endured, they make us who we are. Without my past, my pain, I would not be what I am. I forgot that. I remember it now very clearly, thanks to you. His eyes return to mine.
The message you sent was, in fact, blocked by our technology. After our tea, I sent that message to the comms relay you used to report your movements to Aegea. Pax may have sent you, but the message will no doubt find its way to our sovereign, though I fear neither will be able to sway my husband to return to the fight. But there is one man who might, if he's still alive.
Darrow?
He nods.
But he died on Mercury, I say.
A strange hope grows in my chest.
One I did not think Darrow could still inspire in me any more.
Didn't he?
Maybe. Matteo smiles. But then again, maybe not.